In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's coolest conversations time in Little Steven's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. Chuck Prophet is my guest today. He first gained notoriety as a member of Green on Red back in the 1980s, and has since gone on to make a name for himself as both a songwriter and a solo artist. His latest album, Wake the Dead, finds him exploring cumbia music influences, and on it, he's backed by members of the group Kian Save. The album features our recent coolest song in the world, First Came the Thunder, and we'll hear a portion of that now, and afterwards I'll be back on the line with Chuck Prophet for your coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Wake the dead, get them on their feet. Gonna count our nickels like we're counting sheep. Gonna rob from Peter to pay Paul, and that's not all. Gonna teach the children a little history, but not too much now. Gonna cop a plea, gonna rob from Peter to pay Paul, and that's not all. We might have ourselves a picnic, we might end up on the moon. They might even name a planet after me. If they ask you any questions, go ahead and tell the truth. If we have to, we can plead insanity. If it's good enough for you, it works for me. Gonna wake the dead.
I'm the Mighty Manfred, and for today's Coolest Conversations, I am joined by singer, songwriter, guitarist, and producer Chuck Prophet. His latest album, Wake the Dead, is out on Yep Rock Records, and it features our coolest song in the world this week, First Came the Thunder. Hey, Chuck, how are you?
Oh, Manfred, I'm doing great, and it's great to talk to you, always.
Well, man, a lot has gone on since the last time we spoke. It's been, it was August of 2022, and at the time, you've been diagnosed with stage 4 lymphoma. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's about right. The timeline's a little foggy, but that sounds about right, yeah. After I got that diagnosis, I did 6 months of chemo and, was off the road. And here we are a couple years later, and they have given me a clean bill of health. So that's where I am today. I mean, lymphoma is something I'll live with, but they've got lots of ways to knock it back. So many words. So you know, I feel pretty lucky. You know,
right, man. Yeah, this is all pretty heavy stuff. So it's in remission, and you've been back out on the road. The new album. Hey, and congratulations on the new album, Wake the Dead. Who would have guessed that prior to your illness, that cancer and cumbia music could be related, huh?
Yeah, the big C's, all of them. Well, you know, During lockdown, Manfred, I had a lot of time to listen. And although I have a pretty good appetite for music, you know, oftentimes, as you know, I'm working on a record, or I'm writing for a project, or I'm, you know, getting ready to go on tour, or I'm getting over being on tour. So I don't really have as much time to just kind of lie on the carpet and listen to music, but the lockdown really afforded me a lot of that, and I kept returning to cumbia music, and especially when I got sick, it seemed to, you know, inevitably, it just seemed to lift my spirits.
Can you describe for our listeners what cumbia music is?
Well, it's difficult because it's Latin music, and you know, you got your bossa novas, your sambas, you got salsa music, and they're all kind of kissing cousins, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think cumbia is often has that three-note bass line. Doo, 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 doo. There are some other qualities to it that run through it, and also there's a very specific kind of cumbia that people call chicha, which came out of Peru and Colombia, and it's you know, often with a kind of a surf guitar and these almost Arabic melodies.
Uh-huh.
And there was a compilation record that came out on some New York label called Roots of Chicha. And that was a big record for me, for sure. And I think that was a big record for a lot of people. It was sort of like the Velvet Underground of cumbia.
And now, you'd heard that before the lockdown had occurred or not?
Yeah, I mean, we play a club in San Francisco called the Makeout Room. You might know it. And we played there a lot through the years. And on Saturday nights, they always hustle us out of there, you know, at like 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock. And you know, there's been a couple times where we had triumphant gigs and they're like, get you know, it's gonna be a good time for you guys to pack up and get out of here. And that's because Saturday night at the bar is cumbia night. And one night, me and my band and my wife, Stephanie, who I play with, we all stuck around and we were sitting in those red Nagahide booths, you know, and just the band was having a beer after the gig and I was probably having a Diet Coke. And the DJ showed up and he dropped the needle on a record and I could hear the bass line coming through the subs, you know, and it just... changed. It just changed the whole mood of the room, and I was like, "What is this? What's going on?" You know, and that was really probably the first time I was really immersed in it. And my drummer Vicente, he's from San Antonio. He's familiar with it. He's played a lot of Latin music in his day, and as well as Tejano music. And I could see him. You know, he was showing my wife this really basic dance step. And I thought, man, I just want this night to go on forever. So there have been times when, you know, there's been times where it snuck its way into my, and I hear it spilling out of the taquerias and I hear it spilling out of cars and stuff. So, I mean, I just didn't do the big deep dive probably until the pandemic.
I have this image in my head. You said, I don't normally have a lot of time to listen to music, so I'm not just laying there on the carpet. And so is that your favorite repose when you listen to music, if you have a chance to, is just to be stretched out on the floor?
Yeah, that's
I like that.
It's sort of like when you're on a psychiatrist's couch and you're kind of laying and you're sort of looking into the nothing, you know, and that's when music really hits me.
Well, there are 11 songs on the album. I know the tune Sally Was a Cop, you know, that dates from earlier, right? You wrote that with Alejandro Escovedo, and he did it back in like 2012 on his album Big Station. But the rest of the songs, were those tunes that you wrote while you were undergoing treatment, or do they date from prior to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that actually First Came the Thunder might predate the treatment, and I'm pretty sure that was one of the first ones to come along. And I don't know if it's really technically cumbia, but I know it was one of the first songs to come around, and I, you know, some people have told me that they think it's a song about this rising, this wave of conservatism that's been rolling over us. Some people say it's about my health scare, but I think it's just one of those, you know, twisted romantic songs.
Well, I saw that a lot of the tunes are co-written by you working with Kurt Lipschutz. Did I say his name right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So who is Kurt?
Well, I've written songs with Kurt over the years. He's just somebody that I have the ability to get in a room with, and you know, we can always come out with a song. You know, he's less of a musician than I am. He's a great poet as well. And yeah, I mean, when I got my diagnosis, there were about 12, you know, the doctors weren't talking initially because they wanted to get a better scan, and they couldn't schedule me because everything was booked up. So, you know, there was about 12 days where I didn't know if I'd be making a Cumbia record. I didn't know if I'd be making it to the end of the year, you know, and, it was like having a wooden stake of fear just driven into me. And eventually I was like, I don't know what I want to do. I think I want to go to my writing room. That's my happy place. And Kurt met me down there. And I remember we wrote that song, One Life for Me, One for You, on the record. And, this is an exercise because it was, I was able to get out of my head. Right. And I know it was just an exercise because I joke around that the chord progression is just like C, A minor, D minor, G. I think it may be the oldest chord progression in the world. It might. So I don't think I was serious about writing that day. It was just like an exercise. And then, of course, that inevitably became my favorite song on the record.
Well, so you had this interest in cumbia music that had been developing, and then you're kind of writing the songs, and then you decided to find musicians to back you on the recording. I mean, so you play with these guys, members of Kian Save,
yeah.
Kian Save. So how do they come into this? I mean, had you already written the songs and then you're looking for somebody to back you up, or you already had a relationship with them and then decided that this is who I want to do the record with?
No, there were a number of songs written, and you know, me and my band, the Mission Express, we play in Austin a lot, you know.
Yeah.
And so there's a studio there run by my friend Matt Weiniger, and you know, I booked some sessions in there to record some demos, and you know, we had an accordionist, Cesar Herrera from San Antonio, come up, and we worked with some local musicians. Don Leedy from the Leroy Brothers came and played some really cool kind of 50s doo-wop guitar, and I was just feeling my way around in the dark, you know. But eventually, my manager was working at a club in San Francisco in the Mission District on Valencia Street, and this band rolled up in an Econoline, and they piled into the club. They were all wearing matching clothes, and they started sound checking. And he called me up. He said, "Man, there's a band here. I don't know what it is they're doing exactly, but it sounds like that kind of music you listen to." So I went down there, and that's when I met Kian Save. They're like a five-piece band from Salinas, California. Salinas, of course, is along the central coast of California, a very rural farming community. And these guys are all brothers, and they were just phenomenal. So when I was going through my treatment, they invited me down to their house. They've got a house in the woods in Salinas, and they said, "You come down, Chuck, if you want to jam, you know, we're down to jam, and you know, we can turn up as loud as we want." And so I started going and jamming with those guys. I mean, at first I was like, "Do you guys know how to play anything?" And I taught them how to play an Eddie Cochran song, and then they taught me how to play something else. And then eventually we ended up playing a couple gigs together, and that seemed to go over pretty good. And I got excited about it, and got them into the studio, and also got a couple guys from my band into the studio as well. And we created this kind of blended family. When we tracked the record, I think you'll appreciate this, Manfred, we tracked like 8 guys playing at the same time. No, when I'm tracking 8 guys, I mean, I think you can appreciate this. If it's 4 guys, I can tell you what everybody's doing at any given time. You know, it's like, hey, the bass is pedaling through there. Why don't you go to the ride cymbal? You know, but when we get up to like 8 guys, I don't know what's going on. You know, I'm just flying blind. And I think that was probably the best thing that could have happened. You know, I had no control.
Right. Yeah. You just had to trust that they knew what was going on. You guys knew what was going on. Feeling the song.
Everybody was feeling it. Everybody was feeling it. And that's the way it went, you know.
Well, I'm trying to figure out where did you record? Because did you bring those guys out to Texas, or did you do it somewhere around the Bay Area?
No, we kind of met halfway in Oakland.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah. In the Bay Area. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. And so you mentioned Matt, is it Weingar? Weingar, Matt Weingar.
Yeah, Matt Weiniger. Yeah.
Well, Weiniger, sorry. And then who is Brad Jones, right? He was involved as well.
Yeah, Brad Jones is sort of like he's a school principal, you know. He's great at overseeing, and he can get in there with a real small brush as well, but he keeps everybody between the lanes, and he's really, you know, just a such an experienced producer. And Matt was a little more patient with me when I was really just feeling around in the dark, and we were playing with those musicians in Austin, and we didn't really know what we were doing. We had a vague idea of cumbia, but you know, it's a little different because a lot of this cumbia and this chicha music I was talking about, oftentimes they'll sit on one chord, you know. And so I'm such a classicist and such a slave to that kind of what people might call brill building tradition. You know, I like to have intros and verses, and you know, and then the chorus comes and you give the audience a cookie, and then you take the cookie away and you go to the bridge, and then you give them the cookie back and all those kinds of things. So I brought a lot of that to it as well, and you know, kind of mapped my songs over these grooves. And I just thought about the Clash. I thought, well, you know, they got away with a lot. I don't know if when I heard Police and Thieves the first time, whether the Clash were playing reggae correctly, you know.
It was a Junior Mervin. You know, he and Lee Scratch Perry, but I think Junior Mervin came up with the song originally, and he was not pleased. He was very upset when the Clash did it. And Lee Scratch Perry originally was kind of like, you know, wasn't that keen on it. But then when the Clash got back to him and said, we want you to produce this, he was completely on board then. He's like, oh, yeah, you guys are great. I'm glad you did that. But
yeah.
Anyway, let me ask you, so first came Thunder, you were saying that sort of predated the whole lockdown thing. I was just wondering about how did the song start with the lyric line or not? Just with the title or not?
Gosh, I don't know. I think it came at the same time.
Yeah, okay.
You know, yeah. I think it was trench warfare.
Well, it's trench warfare. How do you mean? You went over the top with it or what?
Well, you just start with an A minor chord and you go, that's pretty good. And then you maybe have one line, and then, you know, after you play that chord a little while, maybe go to an F.
Oh, I see. So yeah. So it's,
you start with, you know, with a count off, and then you just start inching your way along.
Now I gotcha. Yeah. No blitzkrieg with First Came Thunder. It was not like a lightning, no lightning warfare there. It was just,
no.
Just inch by inch.
Warfare.
Inch by inch. Yeah. I gotcha. Well, I want to ask you about a couple of the other tunes on there. That Betty's song, is that like based on a single character, or is she like a composite of different people?
Well, we had the name and we thought, boy, who is Betty? You know, well, it sounds like kind of a working class name. Yeah. And, you know, we put her in some situations, and then we thought maybe, well, you know, she's trying to transcend her background through education. You know, maybe Betty's got an MFA and art or whatever, you know. And so she just came to life in the song, and, it's her song. But somebody definitely trying to transcend their background, in her case through education, could be different for other characters.
Well, why did you include a version of Sally Was a Cop on the new album?
I played it and everybody just responded.
Yeah. Why did you play it? Why was that? Because you did a lot of stuff with Alejandro. Why was that one percolating in the brain?
Well, it's got the content, which, Cormac McCarthy said that when they asked Cormac McCarthy how he could write such, violent themes in a book like Blood Meridian, he said, well, I just take a look at what's going on and I imagine how bad it'll be in the future, And he said, could you imagine, at one time that there would be 35 bodies dumped on the highway in front of a grammar school? And that's what had just happened, I think, in Veracruz or something, around the time that Alejandro and I wrote that song. So, yeah, I just thought that it chronicled a lot of the violence, through the drug cartels. And I thought that it was relevant, to today. But a lot of people don't realize Mexico is, really turned into one of the strongest economies. They've got a woman president. I don't think it's a good time for our country to get up on our high horse about much of anything right now.
Well, hey, so Same Old Crime on the album. That's a favorite of mine. What are the guys singing in Spanish in the backing vocals? It's kind of in the fade out towards the end.
I don't remember at this point. I remember a lot of, I remember a lot of conversations about that in the studio. I know Brad Jones speaks fluent Spanish. Everybody had different ideas that they brought to it, but I think they're singing something in the song in Spanish.
What's the opening line in Same Old Crime?
I wish I was a fish in the ocean.
That's it.
I wish I was a bird in the sky.
Those are the two lines, because I translated them.
Excellent. Good work. Good work.
Yeah, I did that just so I could go, oh yes, that's what it is. Because so now I've reminded you. So if anybody else asked you, now that's what it is. It's the first two lines.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I'm here to help. I am a resource. I'm only a phone call away, a Zoom call away at any given time. Well, you've alluded to some political things in the world, and you've got a song on the album, In the Shadows for Elon. So that's a reference to Mr. Rocket Ship guy, right? The Mr. Electric Car, Elon Musk.
Yeah, that song was written probably three blocks from the Twitter building. I live in the heart of the heart of the heart of, San Francisco. And, we thought he maybe deserved a song. But I understand he has now packed his bags and has left San Francisco for the greener pastures of Texas, where, among other things, there's no state tax, and you can't be bothered with that. But, yeah, we wish him well. We just hope that he doesn't, spend all his money in one galaxy. But I also think that Elon Musk is really proof of one of my oldest theories that holds up pretty well. And I think money makes people stupid. I said it.
Yeah. Well, did you expect some sort of argument?
No.
Yeah. Okay. That's sure. There certainly is a disconnect. There's a disconnect. Yeah. I'm aware of some folks, and it's like, really? Really? Yeah. Or really strange behaviors, what is it? Pennywise and Pound Foolish kind of stuff too. It's like, really? But yeah, it must be, you know, fortunately, I don't know about yourself, Chuck, because you're in a, you have a successful music industry career, but for myself, I've never had to deal with the albatross of or the great weight of too much money, so or deep financial resources.
Well, you know, it's like I think you know, I think about those poor kids in Oasis, you know, Liam and Noel Gallagher, and I think about what they're going through right now, and I really think they should be in our prayers, because they may not know it, but they're going to have problems. They're going to have real problems. They're going to have money problems. They're going to have too much.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, actually I had, this is funny. My dad, worked for the state of Georgia, as a bureaucrat for many years. And then when he was retired, he's retired. And then he's actually, because of the retirement system, I mean, he wasn't paid very much when he was working. The whole thing was, if you can live, you can make it to retirement, then we'll actually pay you some money. And so he, as a retired man, he makes $80,000 a year still. And he did not make that when he was working. And he said to me, he retired like at 55, 56. And,
wow.
And these benefits really didn't kick in until he was in his early 60s. That's when he started making that. And he said to me, son, it's just terrible. I'm making, you know, more money now than I ever made when I was working. You know, it's that's really good. You know, I feel really bad about that. And I said, old man, my hand is always outstretched. If you feel so guilty about that, you can always just put that cash right in my right palm and I won't tell anybody about it. And he said, no, son, that's just the cross I have to bear. So there you go. You know,
I'm going to have to do this on my own.
Yeah, yeah. So we do. All right. Let me ask you again about here the album. You end with a track, "It's a Good Day to Be Alive." So how far along? I mean, I'm making the assumption that it was something that came together during your treatments and such. And if so, how far along were you in that process when you wrote that one, or does that song just kind of predate any of that?
I wish I was better at the timeline thing. I think it came late, you know, because I don't even think there's a demo of it. So I think it came pretty late. And I know that I recorded that one. I just had a little rhythm box. And I came into the studio early one morning and said, I just want to record this with just acoustic guitar and my voice, and we can flesh it out. So James DePreto ended up playing that kind of Santo and Johnny reverbed out lap steel, which is kind of like a character in the song. And Brad Jones ended up putting upright on it. But beyond that, I don't know if there's much more on it. So I think it came pretty late. But I do remember Kurt Lipschitz coming in and saying, oh, I got this idea. And I was like, yeah, that's good. Let's do that. Let's go down that. He had a, you know, it's a good day to be alive. And I know he had "It's a Good Day to Call Your Mother" in there. I thought, oh, this is good. Yeah, this is good.
Yeah. Well, so today is Friday. We're Friday, December the 6th. You were touring in Europe recently. How did that go? What is your favorite European country to play in? Do you have one?
I think probably England. You know, I think they understand my humor. I think the British audiences know how to go to a gig, you know, they know how to get their pint and, get up close to the stage and stand on that sticky black floor and abuse and hurl insults or whatever they want to do. But I feel like going to gigs is part of their culture, you know, and I think there's places in the States that are like that, like Austin, Texas and Minneapolis, and you know, there's pockets where going to gigs is really you know, a big part of the culture. So I really like England a lot. I also love playing in Spain. There's just something, you know, inevitably when we play in Spain, we play late, we stay out late, we end up at another bar like the Wurlitzer or something in Madrid, and they're playing you know, they're playing the Flamin' Groovies and the Sonics, and you know, it's just like, it's just forever. It's perfect.
I'm going to tell you the other thing about Spain. Of course, there's this, you know, the culture that's oriented to going out to see music and just, you know, enjoying life in general. But it's also the food, man, the cuisine. I mean, I just, you know, it's like the gigs are important, but the food is almost as important to me, you know, if not more so, especially depending on where you are in the country.
Oh yeah. The food is incredible. You know, San Sebastian and Bilbao. I mean, you can't, you know, you can wander in anywhere.
Are you much of a foodie yourself?
I have my moments, you know. I have my moments.
Well, you were in Spain recently. Do you have any favorite dishes? Spanish dishes? I mean, I could ask you about English cuisine, but you know, I'm kind of avoiding that outside of meat pies. But what about Spain? Favorite cuisine in Spain?
Well, you know, they really know how to rock a flan, you know, and sometimes they'll do it almost like in a brownie tray, a whole yeah. tray of flan, and they cut it into like squares. Incredible, you know, and, you know, any of these, you know, it's all about the ham here, you know, prosciutto and, jamón. And, you know, sometimes you could just get like cantaloupe and jamón together and, you know, a little bit of salt. And it's just a very simple dish. It can be transcendent.
Transcendent, I agree. Okay, so later this month, you're going to play, December the 28th at the Chapel. That's there in San Francisco. How often do you play in town?
Well, we play, you know, geez, I don't know, a couple, three times a year, maybe. It depends on where we are in our cycle. Right now, there's a new record, so we've got plenty of gigs. And, you know, we'll do a homecoming gig. But in between records, you know, we might play more, we might play less. I mean, I feel like a lot of the San Francisco that was there when I was coming up may not be there anymore. And I think, you know, as a performer, like I was a bit of a slow learner, but just by having the gigs, you know, just by being on stage and just doing it and trying to get through four sets a night at the Paradise or wherever, you know, that's really been my education. And, those were my teachers, you know. And I think a lot of that San Francisco is gone, but, you know, there's still lots of places to play, like the Knockout and the Makeout and, you know, the Chapel and, the Swedish American, the Denord. So, you know, the Great American Music Hall is still has gigs probably, you know, 30 nights a month. And, it's just a great place to live and a great place to dream.
So you're going to, so you do, just do, finish the shows in Europe and then you do this thing towards the end of, this month on the 28th in San Francisco, like in January, doing close to 20 shows in the States. And then speaking of the UK, you're heading back over there February of next year, man. Typically you do a lot of shows every year, right? I mean, as you said, it depends on what the cycle is, but man, life on the road must still suit you pretty well, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, I make these records and there's only really one way to go out there and bring the music to the people. And that's the hand-to-hand combat. So, you know, we get in the Econoline and we go out there and bring it to the people. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, in a way it's like honoring the record. You know, I know a lot of people don't tour. And they put out records, but in a way for me, it's important to honor the record and take it, you know, get out there and do it. Whether I like it or not, I mean, I must like it. I do it a lot. I think I like it. Yeah, sure. Yeah. People, I mean, you know, when things are going, people are generally nice to me out there. Like people like you, Manfred.
And then, you know, you got your friendly insults in the UK, right? But they're just trying to get you in the spirit of things, I guess. There's no, when you play in the UK, there's no gobbing, is there? There's no gobbing at you, right?
No, that's, thankfully that gobbing is in the, you know, not really part of the scene these days, thank God. Yeah, part of the equation, thank you.
Well, like years ago, like when you were in Green on Red, did you guys ever play the UK back then?
Oh, a lot. That was really where we first kind of got our foot in the door, you know. Did a little TV, and we had a couple of records that charted, and we would play up and down the Angry Island, you know. We were on British labels, so it was always important to play in the UK. And we did, you know, and when we played those festivals, we played Glastonbury a number of times. I have a long history with England, and I love it. You know, it's always been there for me, really. It was North America that was hard to... With North America, I just figured, well, if I ignore it long enough, maybe it'll go away. And, you know, that didn't work out so great, so...
It hasn't. I know, it's still here. Hey, the track I want us to go out with is Sugar Into Water on the new album. And who's playing organ on there? I mean, you know, it makes me think of Augie Myers, that tune.
That's Brad Jones. He's playing an organ, as you say, in an homage to Augie Myers. And special attention should go to Josh Baca playing the button accordion. He's from San Antonio and is like a young guy. He's like the Jimi Hendrix of accordion. I mean, and just incredible. So inventive and so on fire. So, I love the way that track turned out. I'm glad you're playing it.
Yeah, we're going to get that in a second. But first, I want to point out, you got the line about trying to get to Tuscaloosa. And I spent a lot of time in Tuscaloosa. There's dreamland there. Even have you ever been to Tuscaloosa?
I'm not quite sure I have, but I'm going to get there, just like the song says. and if you can find a town that sounds any cooler than that, then I'll get there too.
Well, some great barbecue places in Tuscaloosa, and one of them is Archibald's, and that one it's kind of like the just some picnic tables out front. In the area around it, you know, there's like a couple of broken bar stools inside, you know, and the sort of pretty tiny. Then the other one, the better known one, is Dreamland, right? And there you can get a rib sandwich, and that's a piece of white bread with ribs laying on top, and then another piece of white bread on top of that, and then you have to sit down on your plate, and you have to take the bread off because the bone is there, right? It's not, they didn't pull the meat off the rib; it's just the rib on a piece of white bread, rib sandwich right there. That's what you got.
Yeah. Yeah. Always Dream the white bread. Dream always lab. The white bread. Don't mess around. Don't ask for anything else or they can throw you out.
Also, there's a, I can't remember what Marx Brothers thing movie it is, but Groucho has got a joke about something like elephants go to the dentist in Tuscaloosa because all the Tuscaloosa, something like that.
Oh.
I'm not saying it right, but you know, just think of Groucho Marx and that should make you laugh, right?
Yeah, there's a good joke in there somewhere.
All right, Chuck, man, it's been so great having you today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, man, friend, it means the world to me. You know, I often email you guys because I'm an avid listener, and especially the morning shows. When I'm driving up and down looking for a surf spot, and you guys are my companions out there in the Econoline. And so I feel real close to you guys, and I'm always thrilled when I'm a part of the the coolest song in the world.
You should are. Yeah, the coolest.
What more?
Song.
What more can I say?
Yeah. Well, we're gonna take a turn here. We're gonna turn some sugar into water. Chuck Prophet with Kian Sabe off the album Wake the Dead in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck Prophet here in Little Steven's Underground Garage, turning sugar into water for us. Well, a snippet of the tune, at least. The track is part of the man's latest album out on Yep Rock Records entitled Wake the Dead. Thanks again to Chuck for speaking with me on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza and Kurt Baker for producing and editing. Our very own Michael DeBar, fellow Underground Garage disc jockey, has got a new solo album out now titled It's Only Rock and Roll, and it features tunes that have been both influential and inspirational to him. On it, he worked with noted producer Chris Wanzer, and Chris will be my guest next time around to tell us all about the project. That's Chris Wanzer on your next Coolest Conversations presented by Hard Rock here in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Sugar in the water.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.